Donald Fallon is with us for the usual slot of Hidden Histories. Good afternoon, Donald. How are things?
Good to be here. Good to be here.
You've gone all cinematic this week. You want to talk about one of the Hollywood greats. But before we get into it, you might just tell our listeners exactly what's prompted you to go down this route this week.
I think like everyone in Ireland, I've been to see The Joker in recent weeks. And there was so much political controversy around this film. Go and see it. I think it's an absolutely fantastic piece of cinema. Mm. But I watched it in the Irish Film Institute in Temple Bar, where they showed it on the old reel.
Yeah, and
it
really made 70mm.
70mm, and it just made me hark back for the days of old cinema. So we're pulling an Irish legend, if you will, from the annals of cinema history.
An often forgotten Irish legend too, Rex Ingram, who is a name that people might sort of vaguely remember because he wasn't around in the inverted commas glory days of Hollywood. He was a silent movie director, but he made a star of Valentino, got a Hollywood star for himself in the process, but his name is almost completely forgotten today, despite being a born and bred Dubliner. Tell us about his life, because it kind of does coincide, not necessarily with like the real heyday of early Hollywood, but certainly as regards the golden age of silent cinema.
And what a brilliant name. The birth cert says Reginald Ingram Montgomery Hitchcock. That is a brilliant name. Hitchcock would go on to become an important name in world cinema.
He could have just stuck with Hitchcock, couldn't
later
he?
Later on. Born in Dublin 1893, just beyond the canal at Rathmines. And, you know, in many ways, he's one of the hands who shapes modern Hollywood. And, you know, the industry successfully moves with the times, time and time again, shifting with technology. So the story we're telling today has nothing to do with the talkies and cinema as we understand it, but a different era and arguably a very different art form entirely, the days of Charlie Chaplin and the silent movie. And this story really is set in what many people consider the zenith of cinema in terms of its power of influence, the 1910s, the 1920s. Ingram would declare in 1922, he said, slowly but surely, the cinema is coming into its own, taking its place, if not beside sculpture and painting as an art, most certainly ahead of the spoken drama. But little could he know that within 10 years of saying that, cinema as he knew it would be transformed forever.
Yeah, now talk to us about the state of Irish cinema at the time, because obviously Ingram was pretty enthusiastic about film as the coming art, but Irish cinema hadn't really caught up with the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable that a man who's sometimes referred to as the greatest director of all time was Irish. When you look at Irish cinema in the early 20th century, there's not much going on at all. And in fact, the first Irish feature film ever produced, called Fun at Finglas Fair, which is directed by F.J. McCormack, is actually destroyed. It's never seen. The reels are destroyed in the 1916 so, Rising.
That is among the most Irish things I've ever heard, that the first film we ever made, like, we accidentally blew up during a rebellion.
The Irish Film Company,
that's up there.
Yeah. They had their offices on Henry Street, and, you know, between the British 18-pounder guns and the looters setting fire to everything, unfortunately it didn't make it true. But there were movies about Ireland before there were Irish movies as such. Birth of a Nation, 1915, that played to massive Irish-American audiences. It was actually censored, kind of preventing it from reaching Ireland until later on. But there were some people in Ireland who had a sense that cinema was going to be a big thing. Mm. And the rather unlikely figure of James Joyce opens Dublin's first ever cinema,
The
Volta,
in
1909. It was a brilliant idea, but not the first or last brilliant idea James Joyce had. That was a little bit too early. You know, and in the absence of an Irish or even a kind of significant British film industry, basically what poor old Joyce was doing was he was bringing in European and Italian films that just didn't register with Dublin audiences, and they didn't go in any great numbers. But the site of his cinema, if anyone's wondering, on Mary Street, is now Penny's department shop.
Okay.
And they've done considerably better there than poor old James Joyce did.
They have. I also like that the Penny's on O'Connell Street is also the former theatre where Fianna Fáil was founded.
Yes,
so
they gobble
up all the historical landmarks, don't they? So, look, although he's born here and he's a Dubliner, the story of Rex Ingram, though, is a very fundamentally American story.
It's a quintessential American story. And if there's one thing they love in America, it's the immigrant who comes here and does good. You know, and Ingram's one of those people. I mean, well, born in Rathmines, 1893, he emigrates to America, 1911, and he never returns to Ireland again. And he's this mysterious character in a lot of ways, and only in recent years are people trying to get an understanding of him as a person, not just as a director. The cinema historian Ruth Barton from Trinity College, she's done a lot of work trying to give us a sense of this man. But it's probably fair to say, and the point that she and others have made, is that he is perhaps the most famous Irish Hollywood name that no one today has ever heard of.
Which is quite something. And I suppose it's part of the reason why he makes for ideal fodder for a Hidden History slot, really, isn't it? Tell us about then one of his most famous works, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, a phrase which probably a lot of us have divorced from its cinematic meaning, but something that he was responsible for. And actually one of the most successful movies of all time.
Yeah,
really.
And how do you measure success in the context of Hollywood? I would say there's a couple of things. Oscars are obviously important. A Hollywood star, if you have one, is a sign that you've done quite well. And financial returns, that's still true today. What does a movie make? And The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse is this cinematic masterpiece. It takes $9.2 million at the box office in 1921.
In 1921,
that's $9.2 million in the money of 1921, which is an absolutely extraordinary sum of money. It's the runaway success film of the year. It outsells Charlie Chaplin. And Ingram's a great story because he makes his way up, you know, as a director, a writer, producer. But that movie, it propels him into kind of mainstream consciousness in America. It's an absolute epic. It's an anti-war story. They spent 6 months working on it. Now, nowadays, you'd spend the guts of a year working on any movie.
Yeah.
But 6 months back then, you know, was considered a long, long time. Mm. Hollywood was all about pumping them out quickly and cheaply.
Yeah.
So this was a big, big thing. And the crew, 12,000 people between cast and crew.
Well, those
great big World War One scenes. I wouldn't want to be working on the invoices.
So was most of the 6 months because they had to put together the credits at the end and that they were just like, scroll.
What it is it's a brilliant anti-war movie at a time when, dare I say, the world needed an anti-war movie just after the First World War.
A fair theory. He also was responsible for propelling one of the real early Hollywood greats to the top. He made a household name out of Valentino.
What a man, Rudolph Valentino, known simply as Valentino, or the Latin lover. He was really one of the first kind of sex symbols that Hollywood produced. And what I like about Valentino was he knew it, you know, and he carried himself with a brilliant confidence. He said, "Women are not in love with me, but with the picture of me on the screen. I am merely the canvas on which women paint their dreams." You know, it takes a certain cockiness to say something like that.
Yeah.
And only early 20th century Hollywood could produce an ego the size of Valentino's. But like, Valentino as a young man had struggled financially. He was waiting tables in New York, dancing the tango in nightclubs and restaurants, trying to make a living. And then this movie, Ingram, just propels him to the top. Mm. And the relationship between the Irish director and the Latin lover is absolutely atrocious. I mean, both of them had kind of tremendous fate.
Sorry, that was totally teed up for you to say that the lads had gotten on like a house on fire. I absolutely did not expect for it to go so badly.
Both of them had these the tremendous faith in their own abilities.
Okay.
And no willingness to allow any criticism off that. And in truth, to be honest, many people who worked with the Irish director recalled him as a very difficult man. And you'll find very few examples of people that worked with Rex Ingram on more than one film. But the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, it has these incredible war scenes, you know, the French and the Germans attacking each other during the war. And I think that war, it's hard for us now to understand how deep the scars had left
on
the psyche of millions of people must have been. And while there were a lot of World War One films doing the rounds around this time, I mean, they were as much propaganda as they were artistic. Wasn't it a great old war? And many people felt, no, it wasn't the great old war. It was an awful thing. And Rex Ingram managed to capture the horror of World War One on stage.
Yeah, which is no mean feat as well, just from an engineering perspective as well as everything else. Times are changing though in Hollywood, and obviously then the introduction of sound proves a bit of an issue for him.
Yeah, I mean, the misfortune of his life and his career is timing. He comes to the fore right as this industry is starting to change. And when you look at the movies that he makes beyond The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, 1926, he makes The Magician, which is a silent horror movie. Mm. That's a very difficult art craft, if you think about it. Horror movies today, they depend on the jump scare, they depend on sound, perhaps more than any other genre of music.
Or whatever,
so silent horror movies like Nosferatu, The Magician, that's a difficult thing to do. And the praise is great. Motion Picture News, which is the Bible of kind of film criticism, it just pours praise on the movie. They say it's splendidly atmospheric, contains unique settings, and is very well acted by a cast of international flavour. But I think Ingram knew that things were changing, you know, and one actor captured it very beautifully. Someone who worked on The Magician said, "In the middle of my third Hollywood picture, The Magician, the earthquake hit Hollywood, not the real earthquake, just the talkies."
And in fairness, Rex Ingram wasn't the only one who was taken aback by this, because there was plenty of other household names as well who were completely stunned at this sudden development, or as relatively suddenly as it had become, and whose careers went a little bit scaways as a result.
Yeah, can you imagine? You know, video killed the radio star, and the talkies killed the silent era. And the whole experience of going to the cinema was transformed. Not only was it sound, but colour. Colour changed the game entirely, especially for directors and actors working in the sphere of horror movies. And Charlie Chaplin, who many people considered the greatest of them all, he was very hostile to the talkies. He says that the silent picture is a universal means of expression. Talking pictures have a limited field. He said that they'll be a valuable addition to the dramatic art, regardless of its limitations, but I regard it only as an addition, not a substitute. Pantomime lies at the base of any form of drama. So for someone like Chaplin, this was devastating, and for directors like Rex Ingram, likewise, it was bad news.
Yeah, so Ingram then, and artistically and commercially, falls into a bit of a decline. Meets an unfortunately kind of premature end, but there's been a bit of a resurgence of interest in him, particularly over here in recent years.
There has. I think one reason he may have faded from public consciousness wasn't just that technology had changed, but that he was so difficult to work with, and he didn't make many friends. Now, I would argue it's the job of a movie director to make movies, not friends. One of his assistants would recall later that he had a bad temper, he didn't like people very much, he was not friendly at all with anybody, and he was peculiar. But he died in July 1950, a young man, 58, years of age. But in recent years, in particular in this country, there's been a real resurgence of interest that has seen kind of a number of his films shown in Ireland. In St. Patrick's Cathedral, they showed one with a live score, I think, for the St. Patrick's Day Festival. So, you know, there's been a real resurgence. And I think people now recognise the artistic brilliance and the limitations of silent movies and what directors like Rex Ingram had to work with.
Sometimes referred to as the greatest director ever and born just in Rathmines, the story of Rex Ingram. Donal, as ever, thank you very much for bringing that to us. Donal Fallon is a historian. He's the author of the Come Here To Me blog and books, volumes 1 and 2 of which are available in all good bookshops now.